5 minutes after the 1 o'clock hour. Welcome back into the whole show. Powered by PDC Energy and Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. Just to give you a little update again on all things Broncos and what they've done as far as bringing in free agents, moving on from guys that were a part of this team. Well, Mike McGlinchey, they bring in. He was with San Francisco. They signed him to a 5-year deal. Draymond Jones, they decided to let test free agency. He did. He passed that test. Signed with Seattle, 3 years, over $51 million. $30 million guaranteed. They signed Ben Powers away from Baltimore to a 4-year deal worth over almost $52 million, with $28 million guaranteed. I mean, that is just, that's a good chunk of cheese right there. Zach Allen away from Arizona to replace Draymond Jones. 3-year deal, 47 plus million, $32 million guaranteed. They re-signed Alex Singleton, one of their starters, a good linebacker, had a really good year last year, to a 3-year deal. So they're not letting him go anywhere. They brought in a backup quarterback, Jarrett Stidham, from the Raiders. He signed a 2-year deal, $10 million. $5 million of that is guaranteed. Andrew Beck, the fullback, is going to Houston on a 2-year deal, $6.2 million. Chris Manhertz, they got from Jacksonville, signed him to a 2-year deal, $6 million. A little over $3 million of that's guaranteed. And then Mike Boone, running back who came over last year, he's going to Houston as well. So he and fullback Andrew Beck are going to Houston. He's going to Houston, signed a 2-year deal, a little over $3 million. We know Graham Glasgow's done. We know Ronald Darby's done. We know Chase Edmonds is done. What does that mean for Kareem Jackson? We assume Dalton Reisner is done. Eric Saubert, is he still in the mix? Latavius Murray is still a free agent. I'd like to see them bring him back. I still feel like they might, but maybe they're going to let him test and see really what's out there first. Brett Rypien likely gone. Any other big names? There's Jonas Griffith as well. So, overall, really good day. The projected starting defense for this team kind of looks like this. Probably Baron Browning on the edge, DJ Jones and Zach Allen inside, and then Randy Gregory on the edge, Josie Jewell, Alex Singleton, Patrick Surtain, Justin Simmons at safety, probably Caden Stearns if you're not going to make the move on Kareem Jackson. Cornerback number 2, Damari Mathis, and then their nickelback, Kaywan Williams. Weak spot there looks like second and nickel. Can Damari Mathis take the leap? Can Kaywan Williams take the leap? Comfortable with Caden Stearns. I like Caden Stearns. I feel like he was coming on. Kareem Jackson, 34 years old, not getting any younger. I look at the inside linebacking core, I think I viewed that as a weak spot going into the season last year. Certainly a strength. Singleton and Jewell certainly played well. I'd like to see if Randy Gregory can play more than like one game next year. That would be great. But Randy Gregory and Baron Browning coming off the edge, that could be good. See if they can start to develop that four-pillar situation going. Very happy about Patrick Surtain. Excited to see what he can do in his third year already. So that's kind of a look. The weakness, though, the question, if you want to put a question mark over each of these spots, no questions about Baron Browning. I think he did enough last year to show me that he can be good. DJ Jones, no question. Zach Allen, based on what he did with Arizona, no questions. Young. Randy Gregory, the only question there is, can he stay healthy? Josie Jewell, can he stay healthy? But I think, as far as ability-wise, no question there. Alex Singleton, no question. Patrick Surtain, no question marks. Justin Simmons, no question marks. It's the last three guys on that list. Safety, Caden Stearns, Damari Mathis, and Kaywan Williams. So, still feel like this team got better yesterday. Now, they released Ronald Darby, who would have been corner 2, but he's 29 years old. They released, they're probably going to move on from Kareem Jackson. Let him test again, or maybe he comes back again. But at some point, he's going to really hit a wall and not be effective anymore. So defensively, still pretty pumped about this group. Offensively, no question about it. You got much better yesterday. Now, again, none of this really matters. It does matter, because if Russ can't get it going, can Jared Stidham be the guy, or do you struggle so bad next year that you put yourself in a position to get... You don't have any first-round picks, so still can't really tank. It all comes back to Russ. All these moves are great and everything, and maybe not necessarily just Russ, but like Javonte Williams. They're not active in the running back world, so that must mean that they are feeling pretty confident that Javonte Williams will be back to start the season next year. That he'll be, I don't know about training camp and preseason, but they haven't made any big moves. That doesn't mean they won't draft anybody. Doesn't mean they won't go with some secondary free agent guys. But so far, what their lack of movement in the running back department shows me, and their movement with offensive linemen and getting a blocking tight end, it's definitely showing me that, yeah, this team is going to put all the emphasis on running the football. Take Russell Wilson off the high dive there. Not so much dependent on Russell running around and cooking. It's going to go back. It's very much going to go back to what Russell did in Seattle in his heyday. Is Russ good with that? That's going to be the question for him. Because the reason he wanted out of Seattle, several reasons. You know, he had heard the trade rumors, and his MVP quest was halted by some decisions with Pete Carroll. But ultimately, he wanted to be out in a position where he can run around and create. And Carroll looked at it and said, dude, it kind of worked for a while. We did win a Super Bowl with a great legendary-type defense with that Legion of Boom. But is it sustainable year after year, you just running around doing crazy things? Probably not. You know, I mean, the Ravens, listen, as much as I love Lamar Jackson, I know his game's got to be altered a little bit if he wants to last in this league. So is Russ, sounds like Russ is just going to go maybe right back to what they were building in Seattle, which is run first, run second, a little play action once in a while, not a lot of Russ cooking, I don't think. Because we always talked about that last year. Russ was actually pretty good when he had to improvise. And when he did have to run around and scramble and make some crazy stuff happen, he could do it. But how do you game plan for that? How do you draw up a play and say, we're planning on this breaking down? It's like a screenplay, but way more elaborate. Like a screenplay, you design so that one side of your offense appears as though they're getting beat off the block or whatever, and then they're kind of coming back, and then they roll out to the left or the right and set up that wall of blocking. Well, how do you do that with Russ if you're trying to set up a broken play? You can't. Hey, receivers, just run around. Run around in circles. Don't even run routes. Just everybody run and zigzag and make something happen. No, you can't do that. It doesn't work. So I would imagine, based on what we know right now, based on the moves Denver makes, you can always kind of get a theme during free agency and the draft. What's the theme here? What's Denver going to be focused on? Running the ball. Man, Hurts is not a cat. I think he's caught like 12 balls in his life, maybe. I don't know. He's not getting a lot of receptions. So that guy is going to be brought in in those dual tight end sets to block like crazy. And I'm very excited about that brand of football. So, yeah, the old thing is starting to kind of come together here. We'll see what Denver does. You know, the guaranteed money allowed them a lot of flexibility to pay guys, to help attract guys get here, to want to come here, while also setting themselves up in a position where they can restructure things in a way where they are underneath the salary cap. And as Zach pointed out in the interview we had with him in the 11 o'clock hour, this is what happened in New Orleans. He would get a lot. They'd go after a lot of guys, a lot of big-time free agents, a lot of big money, they'd backload the contract so that they were in. They didn't have to deal with the salary cap stuff as much and who they're going to re-sign as much because they had room to do it. They just kept kicking the can down the road. And then 3 years down the road, they'd rework this contract. They'd rework this contract where there's more backloading on the contract. Well, they kept kicking the can down the road to the point where they got to year 14 or whatever, and they couldn't kick the can down the road anymore. The free agency situation was a mess with New Orleans. They didn't have their quarterback anymore either. That's, I mean, I don't know if that's the end-all be-all reason why he left. But sure the heck is the reason why he didn't stay. You know what I mean? Like, there was no going up. He was about to become maybe a middle-of-the-road type NFC team. So the fear is that going to happen in Denver? Well, Angel, if it happens in 15 years and you get a Super Bowl out of it, are we okay with that? I would imagine so. The Broncos have won 3 Super Bowls in their history. You get one under Sean Payton and Russ and make this work somehow, I think you'll be happy with it. That's always the age-old question about Plan B. John Elway made that famous quote here, of course. We're not worried about Plan A or Plan B. We're worried about Plan A. Well, that's kind of the same thing with Sean McVay, wasn't it? The Rams were worried about Plan A. Go get a ton of free agents, bring them in, let's go win a Super Bowl. They did, and the Broncos did too. Some people will fault them for those moves, though. And it's like you cared so much about the now, you weren't planning for the future. Well, if the now can yield a Super Bowl, does it matter? You're a Dolphins fan. If you could mortgage your future for the next 10 years, 5 years, to win a Super Bowl next season, knowing that years 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 are going to be dumpster fires, rebuild, would you do it? Would you rather have a Super Bowl and deal with 5 years of crap or just kind of be a playoff team because you worry about the future, but you're not really making that next step to win a title?
It's tough. The super, like, bandwagon-y fan aspect of it says, yes, absolutely, I want a Super Bowl this year, no doubt about it. But then I look at the Broncos situation, it was, all right, you got your great Super Bowl with Peyton and everything, and with Miller, and everything's on top. And then you had 6 years of, or 6, 7 years of awful, awful transactions, quarterbacks, midnight, and it wasn't like a salary cap issue at that point. It was, we don't have a quarterback, we don't have a coach, we don't have competent ownership, any of that.
Yeah.
So, I
Super Bowl.
Am I guaranteed
about
a Super Bowl?
You're guaranteed a Super Bowl
if I don't get one this year. At any point after.
The weird scenario I'm setting up is that you will absolutely 100% win a Super Bowl next year, but you're going to have 6 years of crap, and then after that, we're back into the unknown.
If I don't win this year,
if you choose not to win it, you're just going to be kind of like a team that goes to the playoffs. Maybe you get past the wild card once in a while, but you're not getting a Super Bowl because you don't have the dogs. You're not spending the money to get the dogs.
You got to go Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That's what we're all playing for.
That's the name of the game, right? So as much as you want to fault Sean McVay for saying, for their management too, saying, you know, F them drafts, those draft picks, they got a Super Bowl out of it. That's ultimately what it's all about. Now, the good ones, the good organizations, the great organizations are the Patriots. We can do all that, win a Super Bowl, not mortgage the future, but still win, make sure we got our quarterback. That's what they did under the Tom Brady days. So with Sean Payton, there's a lot of mortgaging of the future going on here. You traded a lot for Russell Wilson. You traded a lot for Sean Payton. You're backloading a lot of contracts. So in 5 years, it could be interesting to see what happens. But if Denver can get Russ right, you might be a contender. And that's what it's all about. Put yourself in a position to win a Super Bowl or two, even if it means 5, 7, 8, 9, 10 years down the road, you're back to where we were the last 6 years. 20 minutes after the hour, how many people are planning on going to see the CU Buffs in their spring game? We're going to talk to Brian Howley about that. We talked to him about 2 weeks ago. But what's the update now and how are we feeling about the Buffs? And, of course, CU plays in the NIT tonight against Seton Hall. So we'll talk to Brian all things Colorado Buffaloes coming up next. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hear local coaches, players, and more with Coach Speak. Weekdays 10 to 11 on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Brian Howell, Colorado Buffaloes beat writer for the Buff Zone, and you are listening to the whole show on 1310 KFKA.
Minutes after 1 o'clock. Welcome back into the whole show, powered by PDC Energy. Well, on the men's side of things for basketball around here, it didn't live up to the hype. I know the Buffs, you know, made it interesting against UCLA last week. CSU made it interesting against San Diego State, but and the Buffs will play in the NIT tonight. But, you know, as far as dreaming of several March Madness teams on the men's side, I didn't get any of them. Bears didn't get there either. But the women's side was at least exciting throughout the course of the season. How about the Colorado Buffaloes? Brian Howell joining us from the Buff Zone. Brian, big one coming up, man, as we're going to see at least one of our local area teams in March Madness this weekend.
Yeah, the CU women are heading down to Durham, North Carolina to, you know, back-to-back NCAA tournaments for the first time in 19 years. So, you know, J.R. Payne's got that program rolling, and you know, they've got a good shot. You know, hopefully they can you know, get through the first round and make something interesting out of this.
Yeah, talk to us about that first round matchup. Is that going to be on Saturday, Brian?
Yeah, Saturday night, 5 p.m. Mountain, and it's on ESPN News, I believe. So it'll be interesting. They're playing Middle Tennessee, which won Conference USA. CU's never played them before, and it's a team that, you know, like CU, plays good defense, but they chuck up a lot of three-pointers and get to the foul line a lot. So they're one of the nation's leaders in both three-point shots and foul shots. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they play. They're not real big, and CU might be able to take advantage of that because they have two really good bigs in Quay Miller and Aaronet Von Lay, so maybe they can take advantage of that, but it's going to be an interesting matchup, I think.
Brian, what was it that went into this season? I mean, so many special players, and as you said, the coaching staff, a lot of things got to go right for you to have more than 20 games, set yourself up to get into this tournament in the first place. But, you know, what has it been collectively for this this Buffs team in order to get into March Madness?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's really been years worth of building a program, and you know, they got there last year finally for the first time in 9 years. They lost three of their top leaders and really their best player. Maya Hollingshead was a first-round pick in the WNBA draft last year. And so I thought this was probably a tournament team, but maybe not as good as last year. They ended up being better than last year because they wound up just getting a lot of players that stepped up and played better than last year. And they added Aaronet Von Lay as a transfer from Arizona. Her brother played in the NBA, actually had a cup of coffee with the Nuggets, Noah Vonleh. So, you know, she's come in and been tremendous. So getting all that together and really just a real team unit has, you know, come together and made this even better than last year.
Yeah, we're excited to see what they can do coming up this weekend against Middle Tennessee. As Brian mentioned, tip-off at 5 o'clock. Should be on ESPN News. So we're looking forward to that one. Brian, I mean, it's never an off-season anymore with primetime. When it comes to football, it used to be that way with the Broncos. Now it's primetime. We got ESPN. It's confirmed, set to broadcast the Buffs spring football game. What are we looking at? 35,000 so far going to plan on being there for this game?
Yeah, 35,000 sold, and the game's still more than a month away. I mean, that's insane. And, you know, I mean, last year there was 1,950 people. That was the estimate, and it was free. So, you know, the fact that there's 35,000 tickets sold, they haven't sold tickets since the 80s. To the spring game because nobody ever really wants to go anyway. And, you know, for them to have 35,000 is incredible. And the fact that they're on ESPN is cool. But then they're the only spring game around the country that's going to be on the main ESPN network, which is amazing.
That just blows my mind. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, my producer's an Alabama guy. We have the Alabamas of the world. We have all these great teams, the Georgias and all that. And yet we're looking at the Buffs that's going to get at least a big focus, maybe most of the focus, at least for the spring portion here. And it's obviously it's not like it's unwarranted. You know, primetime's great, but you're bringing in big-time names. We're seeing big-time names coming in, big-time transfers and recruits. So on paper, why not cover this team to the highest point on ESPN?
Yeah, you know, and clearly, you know, I mean, Georgia is obviously the national champion. They're the best team in the country the last couple of years, and they're on ESPN too, their spring game. But the Buffs have got to be, I mean, this signals they might be the most intriguing team in the country, right? Because so there's a lot of curiosity about what is Deion Sanders going to look like at the Power 5 level? What's he actually doing in Colorado? And I don't think a lot of people are that interested in University of Colorado football. It's more of what's going on with Deion Sanders and how can he turn this thing around? And, this is what Rick George and the administration up there kind of banked on when they hired him. Is like, we got to make a splash. You know, we got to win the offseason first. And they've done that.
No question. I mean, it's been as good as advertised so far, everything that's gone into it. And we'll see what happens when they actually get out there on the football field next fall. But right now, I mean, this is an interesting one, Brian. A guy you know up in the Fort Collins area in the Colorado, Kevin Lytle, he put together kind of a quick little hit about the attendance and what primetime's doing. And there were a lot of Rams fans that were not thrilled with that. The fact that, hey, this is a Rams-type newspaper, and here on the cover, we got to highlight the Buffs here. From your perspective, Brian, because I saw this and I wanted to ask you, because there was a lot of people who are like, you know, Buff Zone would never put up a story about the Rams attendance. I don't know, man. If the Rams hired some big name, some gigantic name comes to CSU, it blows it up, we're going to see 35,000 at their spring game. Isn't that news statewide, or is that something, Brian, you personally, your paper, your guys aren't touching that because it's Ram stuff?
No, we would. You know, yeah. I think we would put that up there. And, you know, when Jay Norvell was hired, we put something
up. Sure.
You know, when, you know, Pac-12 hires are made, we put that up. And so, you know, I think that at least for us, like, we view that our audience is not just Buff fans, but college football fans. And so, you know, we want them to know what's going on. You know, with not only the Rams, maybe not so much the last couple of years because they haven't played the Rams, but there's still that interest. And, you know, we want people to know what's going on around the Pac-12 and with the Rams.
Well, and again, it's statewide news. Now, maybe Rams fans don't want to hear about the backup tight end or something like that, but this is, to me, this story, the story that you put together here covering and outlining this whole thing with ESPN, with the 35,000, what we're looking at there as far as numbers, that is bigger than the actual X's and O's of the game, meaning that kind of thing can really help grow football throughout the entire state. And if I'm a Rams fan, you know, I'm thinking, dude, build it up. Make the Buffs the most popular team in the state, in the country. And then if we somehow can knock them off, look what that does for us. I think it's great for the entire state.
Yeah, exactly. And you think about it, if CU gets off to a good start, either way, I think. But, I mean, that CSU game is going to have a ton of eyes on it around the country because it's still going to be one of Deion's first three games. And so there's going to be a lot of eyes on the Rams in that week three game. And, yeah, if you're the Rams, go out and beat them, you know. And imagine the headlines you get nationally if you beat Deion's team. And, you know, especially if they're like 2-0 and the Rams can get a win there in Boulder, you know, that'd be pretty impressive.
We're on the same page, Brian. You and I are on the same page. This is why it works, because I've been saying this. You know, I don't necessarily have a dog in the fight. Yeah, you know me. I probably do a lot more CSU stuff because I live in Fort Collins than I do with CU.
Yeah.
But I'm rooting for all of these. We're talking about it all. And if they're great and if it's entertaining, my goodness, it makes talk radio better. It makes your articles better. It makes everything better in the state. And nationally, people start to really put some focus on this. And I remember 5-6 years ago, Brian, I saw several national writers just making fun of the Rocky Mountain Showdown. I don't want that to happen anymore. I want it to be relevant.
Yeah, and, you know, I cover the Buffs, but I grew up in Littleton, and, you know, I've always been a fan of all the teams around here. And, you know, I want CSU to do well. I mean, the Rocky Mountain Showdown was at its best during the Sonny Lubick era when it was, you know, those Lubick teams versus the, you know, Gary Barnett teams that were both a lot of fun to watch and really good teams. And, you know, I want CSU to be, you know, an 8 to 10 win team every year and, you know, be, you know, doing some things nationally and going to bowl games and competitive with the Buffs, things like that. It's more fun that way.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, Brian, tonight, the Buffalo's men's side of things, they're in the NIT first round. That's going to be on ESPN2 tonight at 9 o'clock, I believe, going up against Seton Hall. Man, what a weird season it was for CU. At the beginning of the season, I thought there was just some inconsistencies, but they were overall a really good team. Then they had some stints there where, you know, lost games, you thought they should have won, and then right when I start writing this team off, they battle, they start playing really well toward the down the stretch. I thought they might even upset UCLA. I still don't think we figured out the Buffs, and it might just be that was the season that was. We couldn't figure out the Buffs.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this was a team that at the start of the year and even in November, I said, this is going to be a better team in March and February than they are now. And I'm not sure they are. I think they were just kind of the same team all year that, you know, it was in November they beat Tennessee in Nashville. And then, you know, a couple months later they lose to Cal. I mean, Cal won three games this year. One of them was against the Buffs. And what a schizophrenic year they've had. And, you know, that's why, you know, when I've been asked, how do you think the Buffs could do in this NIT? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, they're good enough to go out and make a deep run in this tournament, but they're also, you know, a team that could very much bow out tonight. So, you know, I don't know which Buffs team is going to show up from game to game.
Yeah, I don't either. KJ Simpson, is he still out? I mean, I know he had mono through the tournament last week. So, what's the status there?
I don't know his full status, although, you know, I understand he has not practiced, and so, you know, my colleague who covers the men's team, Pat Rooney. We were talking yesterday. He said he'd have a hard time seeing KJ actually play because he hasn't practiced. And when you're coming off a mono and you haven't practiced, that might be tough to do. So, you know, Julian Hammond's done a great job filling in for KJ, though, and I don't think there's been much drop-off. So I think the Buffs are okay without KJ, but I don't think we're going to see him. Maybe potentially a second-round game if they get there or a third round, but I doubt we'll see him tonight.
9 o'clock tonight, ESPN2. They are 4-point favorites in this game. How are we feeling about that one, Brian?
I feel good about it. You know, I think this team, again, I don't know which team is going to show up, but, I mean, there are times that they kind of, you know, show up at home and they'll play like, wow, okay, that's the team we thought. And I'm hoping for Tad Boyle and his staff that this team does that and goes out and looks at this NIT as an opportunity to get better and, you know, gain some experience because they can really make that into that this year. Or maybe they just go out and say, you know what, we're kind of done with this year.
Yeah, I mean, that technical that Tad had the other day, too. I mean, I don't know. In my brain, I'm just running through the entire season that was, and I don't blame the guy. I'd be frustrated, too, with how things have went.
You know, if I'm him, I'm kicked out two or three times.
I know, me too, man. I don't know how some of these guys keep their cool. Brian, appreciate you so much, my friend. I know you'll be bringing us stories throughout the week, of course, on the women's game coming up on Saturday. And, of course, everything we're going to need on the football side, because now the prime time's here, your workload probably just get a little crazier because there's always some kind of news surrounding this football team.
Yeah, there's always something in hey, as I've always said, it's not going to be dull, and it has not been dull.
No doubt about it, my man. Brian, appreciate you, dude, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Brian Howell of Buff Zone, covering all things Colorado Buffaloes. There you go. You got the source right there saying, yeah, if the roles were reversed and CSU had hired a big-time coach like Primetime, a big-time name coach, I should say, and they were breaking news that it was going to be on ESPN and 35,000 people would be there, yeah, they'd be on the It'd probably be on the front page. That'd probably be a big story. 37 minutes after the hour, let's jump out real quick on Gel and get the latest on the local sports flash.
This is your UNC Bears head men's basketball coach, Steve Smiley, and you're listening to the whole show on 1310 KFKA. Go Bears.
I don't usually go here on this stuff. Before we do that, Cable's Pub and Grill. It's Tuesday. It's Burger Madness for $9.99. Some of the best food you're going to find is at Cable's Pub and Grill, and they always have deals, always have specials, always something unique's going on. And then happy hour starts in about an hour and 20 minutes, 3 to 6 every Monday through Friday at Cable's Pub and Grill. And yes, that's where my friends meet. March 14th on Gel is apparently Equal Pay Day. Now, it's talking about Women's History Month on this tweet from ESPN at is it Abby Wambach? Had to say this about winning the 2016 ESPYs Icon Award and the pay gap between men and women's pro sports. Quote, "We just got the same damn award, the same sweat, the same sacrifice, yet the three of us were walking into three very different retirements on her 2016 ESPY Icon Award alongside Kobe Bryant and Peyton Manning." Help me out here. Abby's pro sport. What does she play?
Soccer.
She played soccer?
Yes.
Okay. So she's basically saying, and I'm not disrespecting, I'm just, the sports I follow that we talk about on this show are football, basketball. We'll talk, you know, obviously women's and men's basketball on the college side of it. Sports that are really going to move the needle for our listeners. You hear that in any market. So they're just celebrating this from several years ago of what she said. "We just got the same damn award, the same sweat, the same sacrifice, yet the three of us were walking into three very different retirements." Angel, it's very simple. How many people watched her play compared to how many people watched Kobe Bryant play and Peyton Manning play? How many advertisers paid to slap their logos on their stadiums compared to how many advertisers paid to slap their logos on where Peyton Manning played in his career and Kobe Bryant played in his career? The ratings. What are the ratings in America? We're talking America here. And I know soccer worldwide is the sport. But it's still, men's still is the sport when you talk about football. So it's a touchy topic, Angel, but I guess for me, it's like, how do we do that? You're wanting to just equal pay it? So Kobe Bryant should be paid the same as a professional female soccer player? Peyton Manning should have been paid the same amount as a professional female soccer player? You know, it's like when this argument's a little bit different, but it's still somewhat the same. Somebody commented on her Facebook page after we tweeted how much Zach Allen's going to make. And somebody commented and said, "I'd do it for, you know, $100,000. Well, no one's going to watch you do it. I had a guy here, you'll know him as Elvis. He once said on a morning show here, but when I was an intern, he was upset about the lockout or whatever. And I just remember he's like, "I'd go out there and play football for $30,000 a year. Nobody's going to watch a middle-aged guy that can't run and catch and tackle at these high levels play. That's great that you would do it for $30,000 a year, but no one's going to watch you." What my point is, what we're seeing with this whole equal pay thing is you have to look at the economy of sports. If I'm paying for, and this isn't just men's versus women's, I'm not paying to go see a lot of male swimming competitions either. The sports that really move the needle in this country, football, then it's the NBA up there with, what's next?
I'd probably say baseball.
Okay, baseball. I don't even know right now, but what's in front of me. Okay, baseball, then the NBA, then in the NHL?
Sure.
That's 1 through 4. There are NHL players that don't get paid nearly close to what NFL players get paid. But then there are NHL players that make some damn good money, too. It's the economy of sports. It sexist, call it whatever you want, but I don't see these stadiums fill. I don't watch a lot of women's soccer. You tell me if, you know, how much she was making. I don't know.
I mean, if you just look at the MLS as a major league in the United States for soccer, yeah, there are fans for the teams, but it's not like, you know, we're not talking rapid soccer every other day on this show.
Nobody does. Unless you find a soccer show and it's like your niche and that's what you're talking about.
So it's not just men's or women's. It's the sport itself in one instance is that Americans, United States people don't really like soccer as much as they like other sports.
Well, it's,
and you see it every 4 years when the World Cup comes on, oh, everyone's watching soccer. America's finally getting into soccer, and they're finally, you know, it's going to finally start to rise. And yeah, we're seeing it, you know, in spurts around the country, but it's not this overwhelming, you know, just shooting up the charts in terms of popularity that people aren't watching the NBA. They're not watching the NHL. They're not watching March Madness because they're watching MLS soccer.
Right. I mean, that's...
It's just a sport that doesn't sell to us. We have four other options that we would rather watch.
Yeah, quick Google here. The most recent figures cover the 2017-18 season. So just to give us a jumping off point here, in which it's 20 clubs generated revenues of just north of $6 billion. Over the same period, MLS's revenue stood at $1 billion. Now, when you look at the NFL, what did I just say? $6 billion? The NFL annual revenue, $17 billion. Pretty significant. I mean, it's just the NBA, $10 billion. So the MLS, listen, that makes more than I thought, but 20 clubs generated revenues of $6 billion. That's up to the league then. If the league's not paying them the fair amount of what they're bringing in, but they got to bring it in.
All right, it's easy to forget that these sports leagues, these professional associations, whichever, they're businesses. They're companies. They deal
yes.
with finances and marketing and advertising and employment and
sure.
HR, all kinds of stuff.
If I'm paying, if you're wanting to be a manager of the same job as a woman's wanting to be the manager, yeah, and that if I'm not paying you the same amount or her the same amount, then that's where we get into this trouble here. But if I'm working at a company that makes billions as opposed to a company that makes thousands, the manager of this job is going to make more than the manager of this job. You want more money? Get more people to watch your stuff. That's it. That is 100% how to do this. They've got to watch. All right, I'll read text on the other side. We'll get to what we learned. 49 minutes after the hour, it's the whole show powered by PDC Energy on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Want to hear from the coach? Listen to Coach Speak, weekdays 10 to 11 on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hi, this is Terry Fry, author, journalist, screenwriter, and you're listening to Brady Hull on the whole show, 1310 KFKA.
The next time you get angry over a bad play, remember you need teamwork to win, not arguments.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
Hey, hey, what do you say? We all had a special day. Now turn to a friend and say what you learned today.
All right, what did we learn today? We learned that the Broncos are messing around. I talked about this yesterday and today, but they're not going to waste their time with players that they don't really want to be there, whatever. This is a serious Broncos football team right now. We did learn a little bit, though, that maybe there's some caution from Zach Stevens saying Sean Payton did do a lot of backloading of contracts when he was at New Orleans, and it ultimately led to perhaps his demise and the Saints' demise. But that was 15 years down the road. That's future Broncos problem. Angel, what'd you learn today?
I learned that the Nuggets have a lot of self-reflecting to do, mostly Coach Malone, and figuring out the rotations and getting the bench figured out. But a good chance to bounce back tonight against a team. Or they beat the Raptors last week, right?
No, yes, they came back and beat them. So they were down 7 and came back and beat them.
Beat them again.
Yeah, I think you really need to beat them. This is a big one tonight. Okay, Dixon says, I got a few ideas on how to make women's sports entertaining and increase viewership. Want to hear them? Go ahead and text them, and we'll decide.
Why didn't you just list it?
We'll decide if we can read them or not. If women got paid less, every corporation would hire exclusively women to save money. The fact is women choose lesser paying jobs. There's a ton of research out on this, and I don't know about all that. I'm just saying, if there aren't enough eyeballs on your sport, if the XFL fails to deliver ratings, the XFL will go away. And that's, as far as I know, that's a bunch of dudes playing that sport. So that's pretty simple. It's a simple way to look at it.
It's America's number one sport, too.
Yeah, if you go watch the sport, and you see the eyeballs out there on these sports all the time, then there's a good chance I'm advertising with you too. There's people that are advertising and all of that. So yeah, it's an interesting deal. Yep, no question about it. Try to be delicate with it, but at the end of the day, are people going to your games and are they watching them? And if the answer is no, and as we can see on some of the replays and stuff of games, the answer is kind of no, then the money's not there. Where do you expect the money to come from? That's not how it works. That's going to do it for us. We'll be back at it on a Wednesday. Final show of the week for us as we get into March Madness. Good night, Northern Colorado.